Welcome to the latest episode of Public Power Now. I'm Paul Schimpoli, APPA's news director. Our guest on this episode is Bob Kahn, who in July became the new general manager of Texas public power utility Austin Energy. Bob, thanks for joining us.
Sure.
So, Bob, to get our conversation started, one of the things I wanted to talk about is your wealth of experience in the power sector, which actually, you know, obviously, as you know, includes previously working at Austin Energy. So could you give our listeners an overview of the positions you've held in the industry, and how has your industry experience helped to prepare you to hit the ground running as a new general manager?
Yeah, so I actually got to Austin by way. I was in the Air Force up in good old Minot, North Dakota, and got transferred down to Bergstrom, which is no longer here. Now it's the airport. And after I left the Air Force, I was a JAG. I got a job at the Public Utility Commission of Texas in the General Counsel's office, which was my first intro to the electric industry. I had not been involved in that at all. Didn't know a kilowatt from whatever, right? But so I was there a couple of years, and then that's when after that I left and went on to Austin Energy for a couple of years. And then and that was my first time working at a utility, and I enjoyed that, being part of a bigger entity. And after that, I went on. I was actually in private practice with a Texas law firm. For 6 years, I was a partner in the firm, and I represented municipally owned utilities exclusively. So, and I represented them at the Public Utility Commission, at the Railroad Commission, but primarily at the PUC. I got involved at ERCOT issues, you know, the Electric Reliability Council of Texas, which is the entity that runs the electric grid in Texas, and was exposed to the ledge quite a bit also, legislature. And after that, I actually went back to Austin Energy, and I was there for about 15 years. I went in as a lawyer and then went out as a deputy general manager, retired from there. I enjoyed that and was exposed to all aspects of the utility. I was over business services as the deputy. The CFO reported to me, HR, environmental, all that kind of stuff on the business side. And meanwhile, while I was at Austin Energy, I got on the ERCOT board. I was on the board for 6 years, and so learned a lot more about the Texas grid beyond the city of Austin, right? And then after Austin Energy, after I got off the ERCOT board, I was approached to be the CEO at ERCOT, and I accepted that, and that was a pretty exciting role. Did that for getting close to about 3 years. And then after that, I took a few years off, but then I got a job at the Texas Municipal Power Agency, which was a smaller utility. We had a coal unit and about 350 miles of transmission lines, and we served four cities in Texas: Bryan, Denton, Garland, and Greenville. And I was there for 10 and a half years until I took this role on. And so I'm very excited to be back.
One thought occurred to me is that, you know, it's obviously relatively unusual that, you know, you were the head of a grid operator, and I would imagine that gives you some additional insights in terms of, you know, your day-to-day role as the general manager of Austin Energy.
Yes, and doing something like that, being at ERCOT, gives you kind of that 100,000-foot view. Right. When you're at ERCOT, as opposed to, you know, I think working at the city of Austin. So a lot of experience. Actually met a lot of legislators. You know, when you're running the ERCOT grid, you're over at the Capitol a lot. So that was an eye opener for me. Quite a bit was involved in the wholesale market a lot more than I would be here at Austin Energy. Became very familiar with all the different entities at ERCOT.
Wanted to circle to my next question, which is I wanted to see if you could tell our listeners about what your immediate priorities have been as you settle into your new role.
Yeah. So just backing up a second, you know, the second part of your first question was, you know, how's all this helped me prepare, which you just kind of asked. But, you know, I just became very familiar with the industry in general. And I think it helps me solve problems easier. I wouldn't say it's easy to solve problems
right
in the industry. It never is.
Right.
But
right.
I think just having the experience makes it easier. You've been around the block a few times. it just makes it easier to solve problems. But as far as my immediate priorities, you know, we're experiencing some of the issues I think industry-wide that people are having. Supply chain issues is a big issue. Getting wood poles, cable, transformers. And so for the first time, we're looking out well beyond the United States and procuring a lot of those items. We're looking to China, to South Korea, and to Mexico. And, you know, for the first time, we have a section within Austin Energy that their job is supply chain procurement, yeah. Right? We've never had to do that. 2 years ago, you wouldn't have heard about that kind of stuff. And we're getting ready to hire a commodities manager, somebody whose role is to do worldwide sourcing for anything that we might need to help us run the utility. So that's a big issue. And we're actually making good progress on the supply chain. We just entered into a contract with two firms from Mexico to buy transformers. And another big issue we have is we're working on our generation resource plan. That's a priority. The city council wants us to be carbon free by 2035. And we're working on that. We're about 70% of the way there between our wind, solar. We own some nuclear power. So that's always a challenge to go carbon free, but we're working on that. The other thing is you probably read that we had this horrible ice storm down here in February, and we had 170,000 people without power for upwards of 10, 12 days. And, you know, that's lessons learned. We're going to do more desktop exercises for lengthier catastrophic type storms that we experienced in February, which was different than, you know, Uri that we had down here a few years ago, where we had a load shed event at ERCOT. And that was much different than what we call Mara, is what they've called this ice storm, where, you know, it was kind of a catastrophic hurricane type event. And I mean, there are just trees down all over the city. But that's something that, you know, we're studying. We're going to do an after action report and lessons learned. And it's just important that we maintain the trust of our customers. Really, the three big things on my plate right now.
Right. So you touched upon supply chain. And so that would be my segue to my next question, which is, yeah. If you want to see if you want to talk any more about strategies related to that. And I guess the fact that you guys are going to hire somebody with this focus on worldwide strategies, it's not going to go away anytime soon in terms of these supply chain challenges.
Right. Yeah, you're absolutely right. So we have a supply chain team, I'll call it right now, mm-hmm. and we're going to hire this manager. But, you know, one of the things we have to watch out for is, you know, we're sourcing from areas of the world that we've never done before. Mm-hmm. And we want to make sure that whatever we get, a transformer, a wood pole, we want to make sure it's going to do what it's supposed to do. Mm-hmm. So we're, you know, our quality control is going to have to ramp up a little more if we're sourcing from companies that we haven't sourced from before. So we're going to have to watch out for that. That's a challenge. But so far we've had good luck. We've gone to the sites where we're buying. We go out and make sure, yeah, there's a factory. They're manufacturing and they have good quality control. And then we test their products before we get them. So things have been working out fine. And, you know, you have to... sometimes you have to pivot a little on one-offs. You know, we had a shortage of 50-foot wood poles. We were able to easily get 55-foot wood poles, so we're cutting 5 feet off the top, right? So you do what you got to do to make things work sometimes. But I think the supply chain thing over time is the concern is going to reduce, but I think it'll work out in the long run.
And one follow-up, if I could. I know in speaking to other public power utilities, there's been an element in terms of economic development, specifically housing construction and possible impacts related to supply chain. Are you guys seeing that in terms of any kind of crimping of housing development related to supply chain constraints?
That had been an issue, but it's getting better because we're having better luck in procuring. You know, you can't put a new subdivision in unless you have meters, unless you have the wood poles, unless you have the transformers. But we're having the time in procuring those things is being reduced daily. We're doing much. We're just having much better luck once we, you know, for the first time looking at other countries. So, you know, a year ago, somebody wanted a transformer, you know, we'd be told, well, it's going to take, you know, 75 weeks. And everybody was experiencing the same issue. But now the time frame has gone down a lot. So it was an issue. It's getting a lot better, though.
You know, we talked about renewables in the context of your generation planning. And so I wanted to, in that context, I wanted to talk about the Austin Sustainable and Holistic Integration of Energy Storage and Solar Photovoltaics, or SHINES project, which, as you know, is a major project for Austin Energy and various partners. Could you provide an overview of this project? And are there any specific elements of the project you wanted to highlight?
Sure. And that is a mouthful, isn't it?
So
Austin SHINES was a project that we undertook from, it was a 4-year project or so. It really helped us learn a lot about integrating solar and storage into an existing distribution system. What it demonstrated, you know, the goal was to demonstrate integrating technologies on the utility, commercial, and residential scale. So it was a 2-megawatt system. So we had 2 utility scale storage systems. One was residential and the other was what we call community solar. And then there was a commercial site as well with their own solar and battery installations. And this whole project fell in line with our city council goals to go, like I mentioned earlier, 100% carbon free by 2035. And, you know, the ability to store energy means we can harness higher levels of renewable solar power, which fed into the batteries, right, like never before, and make it available regardless of when the sun is shining. So the key benefit of energy storage is, as you know, is its ability to balance power supply and demand really instantaneously. It makes the power networks more resilient, efficient, and cleaner than really ever before. And Austin SHINES, you know, what did it show? Was it successful? Yes. It showed it was very effective for peak load reduction. So when Austin Energy was procuring a lot of power, or customers were trying to procure power at peak, they could reduce their demand charge by using the battery, right? Instead of having to buy from AE, they could use something from the battery. So it was good for the grid and for commercial customers. So really 3 different benefits, I'd say, overall from this ability to do the real-time dispatching. It helps reliability. You know, if there's a problem, you could dispatch the battery. Financially, it helped people. It could help reduce demand charges. And also, if you're dispatching a battery instead of buying power at peak, you save money. And then it's backup power, of course, right? If you need the battery and something goes offline, you turn on the battery. So by pairing energy storage and renewables, which is what we did here, we learned how to actually design, deploy, and demonstrate these technologies with an existing distribution system that we already had out there. And we had to work from permitting to design to installation. So it was lessons learned. It was a good project. We learned a lot about functionality, sizing, siting, and communication paths, because, you know, the batteries and the renewables had to talk to each other when one was going to go on or off. So we learned a lot about that and related to grid scale, commercial, and residential energy storage systems. And so the effort, like I said, took about 4 or 5 years, and we still have that stuff out there. We still have the batteries out there. The renewables are still out there. You can, if you want to read about it, you can go online to austinenergy.com/go/shines, and there's a bunch of information about the project you could read up on.
given all of the lessons learned and the benefits that you described, and this it may be too early for you to say, you know, given that you're still getting settled in as general manager, but do you have any sense as to whether additional storage projects may be pursued by Austin Energy?
I can say yes, absolutely. Okay. And we're always looking at opportunities on a yearly basis. We send out requests for proposals on renewables and energy storage. Yes.
Okay. So, Bob, my concluding question, I wanted to kind of take a step back and look past your immediate priorities and wanted to see if you could give our listeners a sense as to your long-term goals for the utility.
You know, the main thing is we need to run this utility like a business. We need to be nimble, flexible. We want to make sure that we're able to provide clean, affordable, reliable energy to our customers. And of course, resiliency is always a concern, especially like with this ice storm that we just had. We need to look at ways of hardening our distribution system to protect it from incidents like the ice storms or from bad storms in general. We're looking at, should we underground? Do we keep lines above ground, distribution lines above ground, and encapsulate them? So that's something we'll be looking at as far as resilience. We need to maintain the financial strength of the utility. That's always very important. And then, you know, we need to have the right people running this place or managing it. Like I mentioned, for example, because things change, looking at the commodities manager that we're going to hire, that's something we've never had to. So we need to just make sure that we have the right people in the right place with what I call this next generation of workers in the electric industry, because it's getting so complicated and technical nowadays.
Yeah, you read my mind. I was going to actually ask a question, a follow-up question as regards to workforce issues. So do you guys have any formal or informal strategies related to that?
Well, we're always looking at what we need and where we need it. I mean, that is a strategy. You know, we have right. HR here and they work closely with our deputies over operations, business services, legislative, regulatory issues, and with the ever-changing PC ERCOT rules, we're always having to make sure we have the right people that can accomplish the, a lot of times, new tasks that confront us.
Well, Bob, thanks so much for taking the time out of your day to speak with us. It's been a very informative conversation, and I would like to extend to you an invitation to come back at some point. You know, maybe we could revisit some of these topics or other topics I'm sure will crop up between now and when we speak again.
Sure. Happy to do that. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks again, Bob.
Okay. Thanks, Bob. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Public Power Now, which is produced by Julio Guerrero, graphic and digital designer at APPA. I'm Paul Schimpoli, and we'll be back next week with more from the world of public power.